build it, he will.
It's the Skinny on Sports Podcast with Aaron Dowd.
I throw balls far. You want good words? Data language.
Talk real sports with a real man.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
And now, here's the be-all, end-all, know-it-all of high school, college, and pro sports. Aaron Skinny Calc with the Skinny on Sports.
We're talking about practice, man. I'm the MVP!
Good Thursday morning out there, Western Oklahoma. Welcome to the Skinny on Sports right here on 98.1 FM, D Sports and a Mole. Glad to have you along for the next hour. What a shocking afternoon it was yesterday with the announcement that Nick Saban has retired from the University of Alabama. We will get into all things Saban in the second and third segments. The numbers that he piled up at Alabama are unbelievable. Some different things that you can kind of pick out of his time, especially at Bama. I mean, he was good basically everywhere he went, except for maybe the Dolphins. But at Alabama, it is frightening to go back and look what he did while he was in his 17 years as the Crimson Tide head coach. Just an unbelievable run for Nick Saban. So we'll talk about what he did. Who's next? What would you do? That's kind of the question, right? So on the text line, 225-9698, I want to know, who would you hire? If you got the choice, who would you hire in Alabama? And then maybe who you think they'll hire, if that's not the same person. 225-9698, give us your thoughts on where Alabama goes next, and we'll talk all about Nick Saban throughout most of the show. Right here off the top, Thunder split that East Coast road swing, winning in Miami last night. Got a chance to tie Minnesota for the first spot out west tonight, back-to-back, but the second night of the back-to-back back home against the lowly Portland Trailblazers. Oklahoma falls in Fort Worth in Big 12 basketball. They're not the only upset, though. As you look around college hoops this far, just this week, the first 3 days of the week, upsets galore in the top 25, top 10, top 5. So we can hit that stuff. And then, of course, NFL coaching news as well. Pete Carroll, and now it appears in all likelihood, like today, that Bill Belichick and these New England Patriots are going to part ways. That's being widely reported. Nothing official just yet. But a lot of times, if you see Shefty firing that out there, a lot of times you can go ahead and count it as happening, right? It's not to the official stage, but it pretty much, so we can talk about that as well. 225-9698 is the phone or the text line. That is 225-9698. Give us a call, shoot us a text. We'll talk about any of those things or whatever else might be on your mind. Feel free to chime right in at 225-9698. If you're outside the listening area, stay in touch with the show a couple of ways. You can log on to KADSAM.com, or you can download the app. The app's got everything. Radio, Penny News. Brand new edition, that Penny News is out. Go pick up your free copy of the Penny News. Check out this week's deals. Big Elk and Paragon TV still rolling through the high school basketball season with games scheduled for tomorrow night.
We hope.
Yeah. And then, of course, Skinny on Sports podcast. You can check that out anywhere where podcasts drop. How are you this morning, Jared?
I'm good. I'm going to enjoy today before hell freezes over tomorrow and the rest of the weekend.
Yeah, it's 58, I think, is the forecasted high. Man, you can get up to 60 in some locales.
Yeah, it's going
to
be beautiful.
Out here in Western Oklahoma. And then about, an hour or so after you get off work, similar to what happened Sunday when the wind switches out of the north and it starts howling, I think maybe 50-mile-an-hour gusts tonight. This is just a precursor. I mean, it's going to be cold in the morning.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And it's going to be cold over the weekend. But once we get into like Monday night into Tuesday of next week, talking like I've seen forecasts as low as like minus 30 wind chills Tuesday morning.
Yeah, listen, when they include the word dangerous with your weather forecast, take it seriously. And we know what dangerous weather is in Western Oklahoma, especially during spring and early fall. But when it's applied to cold weather, take it seriously, not just for yourself, for your kids, for your animals, for the elderly, all of that. Be prepared for this because it's going to be a cold one. Don't even leave Sunday. Don't even leave the house. Sorry. Well, Sorry, but you're going to have some people will leave, but you know what I mean.
I have to run the sound at church, Jared.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to leave.
Sorry, Aaron. I'm going to opt into the streaming of the church.
We normally park on the north side of the building on days where I have to run the soundboard at the church. One, that's about the only one open when they start practicing, so that we may not have a choice. But I was thinking to myself, boy, and all the rest of the time we parked south of the building. I was thinking, man, it'd be nice to park south of that building and be able to go in that door, not have to get the wind right in your teeth.
We have a spoiled dog that's basically an indoor cat, and we have to let him out to go use the restroom. And there are times we open up that door, and he just stands there and looks at me like, are you kidding me? I'm not going out there. So I have to sometimes pick him up and take him to whatever side of the house that's blocking the wind.
Yeah.
So he'll do his stuff. But, yeah, it's going to be incredible. So today's going to be great, you know. Today's going to be
– That's going to be gorgeous.
I got a feeling a couple people in this office might be ducking out early.
You know, it's one of those days. I was just thinking about this, like, back to the college times when you'd be – you know, golf was what I got to do in the afternoon.
Right.
But there was days in the early spring or even now, like wintertime, where – if you weren't paying attention, which as a college kid, I probably wasn't paying as much attention as I would be now. We got caught with, you know, a hole or two to play the situation, like when the wind, when everything hits.
Did you finish?
Well, I mean, a lot of times you're so far away, you're walking there anyway, so you might as well, you know what I mean? But I can remember a couple of times where, you know, out there in shorts and in a short sleeve shirt, and all of a sudden, feeling like an ice cube when you jump back in the car and fire on the heater, as those things, I mean, they just tend to happen here in Oklahoma. So, yeah, that's coming. There's no doubt about it. All right, last night, where it was warm down in South Beach, the Oklahoma City Thunder finish up this first East Coast road swing 2-2. Lost the first two, won the second two last night, 128-120 over Miami. SGA had 28 on 11 of 17 shooting. Chet had 23. He was 10 of 15 from the field with three blocks. And then J-Dub, 19 points, 9 rebounds, and 12 assists. As Oklahoma City now a half a game out of the first place position in the Western Conference, they'll have a chance to tie Minnesota tonight inside the friendly confines back in Oklahoma City against 10-26 Portland. It's so weird how the, you know, the NBA season, that's why you can't get too high or too low, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because it ebbs and flows. I mean, when we came in here on Monday, coming off that loss to Atlanta and then Brooklyn over the weekend, you know, everything seemed like it was on a downward spiral. Like, okay, where are they going to – can the Thunder keep themselves out of the play-in game? And then you pick up two wins, some things happen around you, and all of a sudden it's like, Thunder about to be number one out West. Just, you know, in the span of a week.
That's the glory part of the – I've always said this about basketball, baseball, and softball is you can't get too high, can't get too low as the season goes on.
Which is such a long year, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so you can't – like what happened at Atlanta and Brooklyn, you can't jump off the bridge. You know, you got – well, listen, you could turn it around like that. And Thunder looked good. I don't want to say struggled, but it is a road game. I've always been on that in the NBA. You got to show up on the road. And they survived it, and then once they got that fourth quarter, they were down, 3-2, something like that, and then they pulled away, and they held on the win. So good win for them, an opportunity now ahead of them, and this is, you know, let's see how they, again, I'll always finish with this, let's continue those ebbs and flows of this month is going to happen, and can they survive it, and can they, and the key to all this is, can they be in a position where they have the opportunity to get that top four, or in this case, I mean, who knows what could happen. So they're playing good, playing real well.
Yeah, second half, I think defensively is where it happened, right? They're down 69-66 at halftime. You know, that's a 140 pace, kind of what we saw in Atlanta on that night where they had nothing. We didn't get there till 4 o'clock in the morning and all that. But in the second half, outscored Miami last night, 63-51. So you get it down in the 50, the low 50s or below, it's going to be really hard to beat this Oklahoma City team with the way that they shoot the basketball. 59% from the field, 42% from three. You know, if you're holding those opponents around that, well, anywhere from like 100 to 110 with the way that they're able to shoot the ball, That's a really good recipe for success. And you know, the second half, third quarters, it seems like they've been under Daigneault. They've been kind of a third quarter team. I know 2 years ago, I think it was, they were the best third quarter team. Part of that was, you know, getting way behind and maybe, you know, the other teams in one of those tanking years. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of a weird stat for them to be the best in the league at something, even though they only won like 20 games or what have you. But last night, down three at halftime, outscored the Heat set by seven in the third quarter. So, or down four, I'm sorry. And then you take a, you know, 3-point lead into the fourth quarter. They grew it out. I think it was like 13 or 14 with a couple minutes left. They win by eight. So all in all, you'd rather be 3-1, you know, with that Brooklyn win last Friday, coming off that, you know, the Atlanta game was always going to be tough because of the travel. And then that was even exacerbated by what happened with the plane. You know, it made a really tough situation even harder with the way that happened. But you'd rather be 3-1, 2-2, acceptable. And now you come home for a couple before another trip on the road out west. And, you know, like we said yesterday, that'll kind of start to tell the tale of exactly where Oklahoma City may finish by the time the regular season is over. OU went down to Fort Worth, beaten by TCU 80-71. Turnovers and lack of three-point shooting, really the culprits for the Sooners. They did a good job on the boards against TCU, out-rebounded the Frogs by a couple. But you turned over 14 times, 7 out of 25 from 3, and it seemed like there, when they were trying to get back in it, down 5, 55-50 at one point, had a couple of wide-open looks from 3, didn't go down. Then TCU went on a little spurt. It was 61-50 at one point. Then they kind of just held OU out at an arm's length from there, and the Sooners were never really able to threaten back toward as if they might win that game. And TCU knocks off OU. Sooners now 1-1 in the conference, heading to Kansas on Saturday.
I think we all know or knew this going in from last season and this season, especially with the addition of the teams. Winning on the road in this conference is tough. Look what happened to Kansas last night. It is going to be tough. So when you have you have to win those games almost. Especially like Kansas, they're going to be kicking themselves if that loss to Central Florida last night is the difference between the outright conference title or in a one seed in the Big 12 tournament and not. So you got to steal those games. We've always said that. You got to steal those road games. I had a feeling that was going to happen to them on the road at Fort Worth. It's a tough place to play. But my phone's blowing up. The refs. I'm tired of doing that. I'm tired of doing it. Only one time I complained about the ref, and it was the kick three that they took off the board. But that wasn't the difference in the game. So got to win on the road. This is a tough conference. We knew that going in. It doesn't matter almost. I mean, there's almost no gimmies on the road in this conference. Mm-mm. You have to show up, and sometimes it just doesn't happen. Doesn't take anything away from Coach Mosier and the team, but now they got to bounce back and try to take on a tough Lawrence or a tough Kansas team that just coming off a loss too. So a couple of teams will be hungry for wins, and that in a weird way might ratchet up the intensity of that game on Saturday.
Yeah, OU hadn't won in Kansas since 1993. If you want to talk about the refs, that's just a good precursor to what's going to happen in Lawrence on Saturday.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Get ready for it.
Yeah.
You know, you think back to last Saturday in the opening week or the opening day of Big 12 play. Quite frankly, TCU got screwed at Kansas. Kansas would be at 0-2.
How close? Yeah, and TCU would be 2-0.
That's right.
How close would that? Yeah.
With that feather in their cap of a win in Lawrence.
Yes.
That not many are going to get.
And two wins over two top 10 teams. Yeah. That's something. Jamie Dixon is a good coach. I was always like, what? Fort Worth? TCU? But, man, he's done a great job over there. He's been really good.
The conference, what, 14 teams right now?
Right now.
Outside of Oklahoma State at 8-7 and West Virginia at 5-10, here's the overall records for these teams. 13-2, 13-2, 12-3, 10-4, 13-2, 12-3, 13-2, 12-3, 12-3, 14-1, 12-3, 12-3. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's good. And you play 18 games, 12-6, 11-5 is going to win this conference.
Exactly.
So
protect home court, steal the games on the road.
Steal a few, yeah. And that's been Kansas's secret of their success. Mm-hmm. Yes, they're almost unbeatable in Allen Fieldhouse for a lot of different reasons. But they've been able – I mean, how many times have you seen You know, if it was Oklahoma, if it was Baylor, if it was Texas, if it was Iowa State, go back to Missouri, whoever it might be throughout the years, how many times have you seen Kansas go in somewhere in a huge spot in February and win? It happens all the time, and that's why they dominated this conference for so many years with all those, what, 15, 16, 17 straight regular season titles that they either earned outright or split. I mean, that's why. They take care of their home floor, but then they win on the road a lot more than anybody else.
But listen, Lawrence, Kansas is scary almost any time for everything you said. But for some reason for me, Lawrence, Kansas in the afternoon seems scarier than a night game. I don't know why. Because it's something about how the Allen Fieldhouse sets, and you can kind of see the shine in.
Yeah,
and, but the,
it's true.
And the place is always packed. I don't know what it is. It's fun. It's one of my favorite memories of sitting down and watching a game on TV on a Saturday afternoon from Lawrence, Kansas, watching the Sooners or Cowboys go there and try to win. But it is an afternoon game on Saturday, and it's just something about the afternoon games in Allen Fieldhouse has a special feel to it, and it's fun.
Good point on the text line. In the two losses for Oklahoma, really had trouble with the aggressive man-to-man, in-your-face defense. Turnovers were a huge part of both losses to North Carolina and then last night to TCU. So a really good point.
How'd
there
they shoot
as well.
From outside without looking?
7 of 25 from three. Yeah, that's maybe. Turn it over 14 times and you make less than 25% of your threes.
You got to hit them.
It's hard to win on the road.
That's
in the
kind
Big
of
12.
What happened to North Carolina at North Carolina. Mm-hmm. They got a slow start and couldn't catch up, and the threes were low on the low
12
side.
12 of 17 free throwing as well, missing five.
Saying that going in too, I mean, as we study this team through the lesser opponents, okay, what can get this team is if they have a flat night shooting, they could lose some games, and some of that was happening last night, but the turnovers were big.
Yeah, it's harder to turn over against the bad teams, but the good teams guard you better, and the turnover bugaboo bites again. Then yesterday, Pete Carroll he resigns. He's going to be some sort of front office type guy for Seattle, or a associate or a assistant or a whatever. I'm trying to think
a cushy
of
an
analyst
job.
Or what have you. So he's out, and then it looks for all the world today like Bill Belichick will be out as well as he and the – you know, it's – you know, Carroll isn't on the level of Saban or Belichick. Now, he's done something that neither one of those guys have done, and that's claim titles in both the pro, in college and the pros. Mm-hmm. So he's kind of on a certain level. But when you talk about the all-time greats, that's Bill Belichick in the NFL, Saban, obviously, that we're going to talk about coming up here in the college game. But to me, when you think about Saban and you think about Belichick right now, I think it's more like devoting half the show to Saban because it feels like he's done. He's done. Whereas Belichick.
Well, the R word was used, but that doesn't mean a lot. There's Urban Meyer used the retired.
Sure, but he's also, I mean, they're all similar ages. It's that early 70s.
Yeah.
But Saban feels done. Belichick feels like he's done with the Patriots, but not done, period. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so it's more of like a. I feel like today is more of a reflection on Saban's career because I think his career is over. Whereas Belichick, can you imagine him not coaching next year?
He might take a year off
like
Sean Payton did, and others have done that too.
Is he too old for that though?
I don't know. I don't know. It would have to be almost. Not a perfect situation, but an ideal situation for him to go, okay, I'll immediately go here. And I don't know if that situation has presented itself just yet. Can you think of... I mean, okay, for example, it doesn't really feel like Bill Belichick and Las Vegas go together. for the program or for the franchise, but for the city itself. He doesn't seem like a Vegas kind of guy.
No. He doesn't feel... the team, the way that Mike Vrabel coached the team, Tennessee kind of fits, but he doesn't seem like a Nashville guy.
But he's, no.
L.A.? Can you see him out at L.A. with the Chargers?
I can't see him driving down Sunset Boulevard with the top down and
now the place
sunglasses
that, the
on.
Place that he does seem to fit, in my mind, but the team is the worst, is Washington. He feels like a nation's capital type of guy.
New England area.
The new, yeah, he's kind of still in that same area.
That region, yeah.
But their team is the worst.
Yeah, the team's bad. That's where the ideal situation doesn't fit.
That's right. Yeah, the perfect one doesn't.
The perfect situation, yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what he does.
No, that is interesting.
But six Super Bowls, nine Super Bowl appearances, six wins, 24-year run up there. I mean, it's almost quite literally unmatched in NFL history, the longevity and the success of Belichick and the Patriots organization under the tutelage of Bill Belichick. I kind of wonder, as we start to transition to Saban here, they are good buddies. We know that, right? I mean, it's well documented that Saban and Belichick are boys. Saban was on Belichick's staff in Cleveland way back in the 90s, before Bill Belichick and Nick Saban were Bill Belichick and Nick Saban. I wonder, though, if this announcement by Saban has anything to do with kind of seeing Belichick these last couple of years. His legacy maybe not eroding, that's not the right word. But, you know, kind of slipping. And he decided, you know what? I ain't going out like that.
Yeah. With Georgia kind of taking over. Yeah.
You're going to get tired of me saying, all right.
Hey, real quick, final question about Carroll. What will you remember him most for, college football or pro football?
I think I'll remember it for college.
I do too. I think that's our age, though.
Probably.
We remember the USC.
Somebody a little bit younger than us probably remembers him more at Seattle.
Yeah.
The thing about him is he's certainly different than either of these other two. From, like, personality-wise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Belichick and Saban seem very, 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 very similar. Whereas Carroll... You know, that I still remember, you know, going out down to the Orange Bowl, all the media for that Orange Bowl game with Oklahoma at the end of the 2004 season, and everybody being astonished by the openness of Pete Carroll's style to them. You know, he didn't care. Come on in. And people talking about how loose that it seemed like they were. And that has to, in a lot of ways, has to help you as a player. Be able to go out in those pressure-packed situations and play your best. Now, maybe sometimes that looseness gets – maybe some T's don't get crossed and some I's don't get dotted, possibly. But as far as, you know, having your team ready to go, that's what I remember about him. And, you know, maybe you remember the – if you want to remember the NFL and not college, you remember it because, like AJ says on the text line, that his college career is because he escaped the posse coming – for what was going on at USC, NCAA-wise.
Right.
But, yeah.
Right. There are going to be older people who say, well, I remember him from his first stint in the pros. It wasn't very good. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I think I remember him at USC more, even though it was a shorter tenure than what he had at Seattle.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk Saban. Is he the greatest college football coach of all time?
Well, with how big the sport has become, you kind of alluded to that. I think that was off air. It's hard to argue against that. And then when you start comparing national titles and wins and stuff, he's always going to be compared to Bear Bryant. And what, you know, but that was back in the 60s, 70s, through that tenure there at A&M mostly. And but I think because of how big the sport became in the late 90s and obviously 2000s to now, it's hard to say no. How the sport has expanded, how you saw more, can we say there were more contenders, maybe?
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
You had to... So Bear Bryant only beat the number two team in a bowl to win the national title on pure accident. No, I'm serious. Just because of the way the bowls were tied in.
Right.
It was pure accident if, say, Penn State was that contender that got to go to the Sugar Bowl. You know, if it was Oklahoma, Oklahoma was going to play down in the Orange Bowl. If it was USC, they were going to play in the Rose Bowl. If it was Texas, they were going to play in the Cotton Bowl. You know, it kind of had to be one of those, you know, Notre Dame, Pitt, Penn State. You know what I mean? It had to be a certain select few teams in order for the Bear to have to beat somebody to win that title. And it was just up to voting, you know, after that. So I think it was much harder in the Saban time to be able to claim the actual national title because he actually had to win a title game. They both won 6 at Bama. Over 17 years for Saban, 25 for the Bear. Saban won 2. Let me look here. I had it written down. Saban won 201 at Bama. Bear won 232. But once again, 8 more seasons.
Yeah.
You know, 13 conference titles for the Bear, 9 for Saban. You know, it's hard to believe that he doesn't catch all these numbers at Alabama specifically if he doesn't coach for 8 more years. And, you know, and now he has a couple of extra games a year, and that's gotten more and more as we've moved along up to as many as 3 or 4 now. So that certainly helps him, you know, maybe gives him a season and a half or two. So let's say he has 6 seasons to get there. He's still getting there, you know, with the wins. How many coaches have won a national title at different schools?
Myers won.
Just 2 that I can think of.
Of course, Saban. I'd really have to dig into that one. Top of my head, it's the only 2 that come to mind.
Because I think it's the only 2.
Yeah.
I think it's the only 2. Is him and Herb.
Depends who you ask, though.
What do you mean?
Well, if you ask A&M, they'll say, well, we claimed one of those when Bear was there.
Yeah. Okay, whatever. Point
but
is.
No, yeah, that's
another thing that he has in his back pocket if you want to talk about who's the greatest. I don't think there's any doubt. And you start to look at some of these numbers. 7 national titles, 6 at Bama. 292 wins. That's 6th most in the FBS. He won everywhere. 9-2 at Toledo, 34-24-1 at Michigan State, 48-16 at LSU, and then erased all doubt. 201-29 in Alabama. 201 wins and 29 losses. He had more first-round picks at Alabama, 44, than he had losses. I saw this yesterday. This is one of the most fascinating stats that I can even think of as a coach. He was ranked number 1. Bama was ranked number 1 at some point in every season from 2008 through 2022. This was the first year since his first year that they never were number 1 in the AP poll.
Yeah,
that is stupid.
That one makes you dizzy when you think about it.
16 straight 10-win seasons. That's the most in the AP poll era, dating back to 1936. Here's one. He, at Alabama, spent 109 weeks at number 1 in the AP poll.
Who's next closest?
Ohio State. The school at 105 and OU at 101. Saban was number 1 more weeks than any school ever. Ever. And then this one is one that it still applies. Anybody that stayed 4 years starting in 2007 to recruiting class, anybody that stayed all 4 years in Alabama won a national title.
Wow.
Anybody.
Imagine having that one in your back pocket in recruiting.
Absolutely. I mean, he and it's been brought up throughout the years. You will win a national title if you come here.
You will get a ring. Not a conference ring. You'll get one of those too, but you'll get a national title ring.
Right. Yeah, I mean, a lot of these things
for 4 years.
A lot of these things are like conference titles.
Yeah.
Or being ranked.
Yeah.
Instead of number one and national titles. So where does he rank when it comes to, I mean, college football? It's hard to not put him number one. Okay, where does he rank in college athletics?
Of all athletics.
Let's start with college, and then we'll go to Mount Rushmore type of stuff across professional and college.
Well, you're going to go back in time and you'll look at coaches I'm shooting from the hip, but what was Rupp like at Kentucky in basketball? You say Kentucky basketball, that's just the first name that will come to mind. And then, of course, the current run with Patty Gasso at OU and what she's doing, which who knows how long that's going to keep going. It just feels like as long as she is the head coach, that's going to continue to roll. I'm thinking about, and I'm sure there are some smaller athletics. Are we just going for the major sports? What about UConn women's basketball? Gino up there, what he did. Now it's kind of fallen off a little bit. Dean Smith's a good one on the text line. But I mentioned all those. I know there's the recency of where this is like Nick Saban Day and Nick Saban Appreciation Day. So there's gonna be that recency bias of you want to put him at the top, but I think that's still a conversation. I think that's still kind of the answer even months from now when you have this conversation is he could be one of the best of all time of all sports. And then there's the weight of it. How much weight does competing in college football compared to others? I mentioned there's been more contenders. The game has changed where it's hard to win. It's hard to win national titles year in and year out. And he did that all the time. I mean, during his tenure, you mentioned all the numbers there. So there's that weight there as compared to, well, no offense to college softball, but there's OU and then there's about three or four more. UCLA always seems to be there. You see where I'm going?
Mm-hmm.
So it's again, it's hard to not keep him out of that top spot.
Yeah, John Wooden.
John Wooden's a great one.
John Wooden, we got that one on the text line a couple of times. He's one I wrote down. Gino Auriemma with 11 titles. John Wooden had 10. It came in 12 years. We got Pat Summitt is one that's been kind of named here.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Kay, Mike Krzyzewski. The thing about Kay or even Dean Smith doesn't have the titles that Saban has, but those guys, Dean Smith particularly, went through his coaching career at North Carolina in what a lot of people would consider the heyday of college basketball. Wooden was kind of on the tip of that. And then through the 70s into the 80s, you know what I mean? That was the thing about what Saban's done at Alabama is it's never been harder to win a national championship in college football than when he's had to go win it, and he's done it. And you got Tom Osborne out there on the text line. There's a lot of different guys, but it's hard, and we're probably prisoners of the moment. And another thing is we've known, 20, I'm 23 years old, when Saban won his first title against Oklahoma down in the Sugar Bowl with LSU. So, I mean, it's we've been old enough to understand what he's done throughout the entirety of his run. Whereas, you know, the wooden thing, heck, it wasn't born.
You know, yeah.
Remember Dean Smith, obviously Kay, you know, the women's coaches. But it does seem like Saban belongs at the top of that list. Don't you think? I mean, it really seems like Saban belongs number one on that list. What about in all sports, college and professional?
See, that's what. And then
like I've made a Mount Rushmore.
Exactly. That's exactly where I went.
Yeah, here you go, John Smith. Oh, she's wrestling. Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of those. You know, like I think Mike Candrea was one that brought up about Arizona softball.
Right.
You know, there's lots of different. And Saban probably gets a benefit of the doubt because of the sport he coached, and that being college football.
That's where
and at the time that he coached it.
At the time, the sport, all of that. Right. Yeah. Who'd you say? Who'd you bring up? Oh, the Mount Rushmore thing. Yeah. That's where I went to of all sports. So I went, okay, let's put him on the Mount Rushmore. And I naturally went like the major sports, and then I put Saban on there. So I went with my four here of all times. Saban, man, that's a tough one. You mentioned Wooden. You mentioned all those other names. I went with Saban. I went with Belichick. I went with Phil Jackson. And I kind of went offshoot and put Tony La Russa on there.
Yeah, I was thinking about a Major League Baseball manager. I thought about Joe Torre.
Joe Torre, definitely.
Or some of the older ones.
Yeah. But, I mean, he had such great Yankee teams.
Yeah, so did Phil Jackson.
Yeah, so did Phil Jackson.
Phil Jackson had Scotty and Michael, and then he had Shaq and Kobe.
Yeah, so it's hard to put one, like, pick the best of all time ever sports coach ever. But that's why I went with immediately Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm.
So I went with four there. And in the baseball one was hard. I mean, it's very subjective.
I just left baseball off. I had three of the same: Phil, Belichick, and Saban. I put John Wooden on there. Some other guys that I, Kay, Vince Lombardi, the Bear. You know, there's been a ton of really really good ones at times, mm-hmm. when you go across college and the professional level. You know, it's hard to keep the guy that the trophy's named after when you win a Super Bowl off of Mount Rushmore, right? I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's hard to you know, compare the pros in college, but as far as coaches Mount Rushmore, you know, those are, you know, heck, Mike Holder at Oklahoma State golf, you know, the guy at Houston in golf, you know, as far mm-hmm. as back to the college thing, mm-hmm. there's been tons that have really, really succeeded in their space. But the space that Saban swallowed up there's so much less airspace for everybody else because it was college football and because of how he did it in the time that he did it. So. I think he's thinking Augie Garrido, Texas, Cal State Fullerton baseball.
Yeah,
and he was a legend. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, I think you're looking at. I think Saban probably makes any of these lists that you can come up with, right?
Yeah.
Or if he doesn't make it, he's certainly in that conversation.
He will be. He's going to be on a lot of lists. He's going to be very far up a lot of list, if not at the very top.
Yeah.
And I keep going back to the how hard it is to win in college football. How hard it is to go. I mean, that's why I know you don't. I mean, people don't like the situation at Michigan, but it's so hard to navigate a season and go undefeated and finish with a national title.
Yeah, and he did that what?
Yeah, how many times did he do that?
2009, 2012, 2020.
I mean, in an era when losing a football game in a season, especially in college football, when you have people burning down their homes thinking, that's it, season's over. You know, it's so detrimental to your chances to win national titles. And he's been able to navigate those losses, too, and win titles. That's why college football, that's why he's so up there on these lists, because of it's so hard to do all that. And he consistently did it since he set foot on campus.
Yeah, but it's Bobby Bowden, as far as consistency, mm-hmm. You know, he had that run of what, top four finishes in the AP poll, like 14 straight years, something like that.
Right.
But he won two titles. Saban won seven. You know, I mean, it's like the last, like, 8 years of Tom Brady. It was a hell of an argument who was the greatest quarterback of all time until he won, like, three out of the last 5 years. Then it's not any fun anymore.
Yeah.
Because rings. You know, and
that's all he had to do.
This is fun. Is Manning better than Brady? Is Elway or Troy or whoever you want to? It doesn't, you know, whatever your favorite quarterback is. And then he wins those last three Super Bowls, beating the Seahawks, beating the Rams, then going to Tampa, and it's like, and then the Falcons. What, he went 4 in his last 7 or 8 seasons? Then it just, after the age of like 38, like Brady after 38 is better than everybody. You know, it just ruins the conversation. And that's kind of what Saban did, you know, and he's got like kind of two, even at Alabama, he's got like two distinct sections of his Alabama tenure. It was the game manager, Greg McElroy, A.J. McCarron, kill you on defense and running game and be able good enough to win the titles. And then I know I texted this to Jim yesterday and he fired it out there on the air, but isn't it interesting that Trevor Knight's greatest contribution to college football is actually to Alabama and not Oklahoma? Because think about what Saban did after that Sugar Bowl, and he completely changed philosophy. He saw that night, because there's no way that Oklahoma team was physically as capable as his team.
Yeah.
And he saw that night what that did, and he changed. And kudos to him for being flexible and changing the way that he changed. And then once, you know, that was always kind of the joke. What happens if LSU or Alabama ever get an offense? I'll tell you what happens. You don't touch them. You saw it a few times for Saban. 2020, that offense with Devontae, Jalen Waddle got hurt. I mean, but, you know, that offense was unstoppable. And they still played pretty good defense, as the same way the year before when Burrow and all those dudes were running wild over everybody. That's what happens when those guys actually get offense. And he adjusted, and he, you know, he was great at every single aspect of it. He might be the best recruiter ever. 10 number one recruiting classes in his 17 years. In game decisions, having the cojones to pull Jalen Hurts at halftime against Georgia, put in Tua Tagovailoa, and how that ended. I mentioned this to Jim yesterday too. Remember back in the first Clemson-Alabama game, they could not stop Deshaun Watson. It was obvious.
Yeah.
So they score a touchdown, go up by 4. What does he do? Surprise onside kick. Yeah. They get it. Now they that extra possession that they almost had to have to be able to win that game, he created with an onside kick. Now, because he was already Nick Saban, does that help him not have to worry about the fallout if that doesn't work? Of course. He can still go. I mean, at that time, he's got 3 titles already on his way to 3 more. But you know what I'm saying? That helps you with your job security to make that call. It helps you with doing that with Tua. Because if it doesn't work, what are they going to do, fire you? No, I'm right. Nick Saban.
Yeah.
But having the presence of mind and having the ability to make those decisions on the fly, he, you know, that's his in-game coaching. And obviously the game planning. He talked They talked ad nauseum the other day on the Rose Bowl about how those playoff games, he said they're games of adjustment. And you saw the adjustments they made, even in a loss, to where the third quarter and most of the fourth quarter, they dominated Michigan. You know, to where it seemed like, here we go. Bama's going to win again. You know, and then they give up the drive at the very end. But, just all aspects of coaching, he's like the best at it. You know what I mean? He's just awesome.
Back to the Jalen Hurts benching, and that was kind of a micro, what do you call that? Just a snippet of how his players expected what was expected of players when they came to Alabama. Mm-hmm. And it was in an era where you got egos. You got players with egos. I'm highly recruited. I'm a five-star guy. Everybody in the country wanted me. I chose the best school in the country. I'm coming to campus. Here I am. And when they get to campus, it was quickly apparent and I think it was a type of player that Saban would recruit too, it was kind of like the Bob Stoops speech. Like, you're at Alabama. Alabama is bigger than you. And what we do here is bigger than what you do personally, what you do individually on the field. And if I got to bench you, I'm going to bench you. And there was, so I saw a lot, the Jalen Hurts thing is a good example of it. But you saw a lot of that. I mean, I'm not saying he benched all these five-star recruits, but you didn't get a sense of guy. You didn't see a mass exodus of players before the portal age. Of wanting to transfer out of the program. They stuck it there, and I think that's another big reason why he kept kids on campus and they kept winning. And they put egos aside of, I was the top dog at Hoover, Alabama, and now I'm playing for Nick Saban. Like, well, yeah, you're just another part to this machine.
Think about Jalen Hurts. He did get benched.
Mm-hmm.
But whatever Saban sold as the process or the whatever that was, fast forward a year. And not only did Jalen Hurts not leave, Jalen Hurts stayed engaged enough to where when Tua got hurt against Georgia in the SEC title game, wasn't it Georgia? Yeah, in 2018, sure was.
Yeah.
He came in and led the game-winning drive in the fourth quarter, brought him back in the fourth quarter to win the SEC title, of which then they end up playing for the national title,
right,
and getting blown out by Clemson. But still, you know what I'm saying? That's to not only keep him on campus, keep him engaged enough to where he's ready, it says a lot about both of those guys. Not only Jalen Hurts itself, but also Saban of keeping those guys and holding them to a certain standard to where they were called on, they made plays, and they were able to get it done. And that goes into what –
yeah,
kind of everything he's about. Now, question is, what's the fallout? Would you follow a legend?
I put a lot of thought into this.
If you're some of those guys that are being mentioned, would you follow a legend? Now, I want to hear from everybody on the text line. Who would you hire? Who do you think Alabama's going to hire to replace Nick Saban? 225-9698. Let's hear your thoughts. You see that if you follow message boards at all, you kind of see crazy stuff at times. Yesterday, Auburn, somebody, WDE280, nailed it.
They heard a...
Rumor is, and this was at like 3:30. Rumor is that Saban has called a mandatory team meeting this afternoon at 4. Could it be retirement announcement? Anyone hearing this? Bammo.
Has he posted that every day?
Yeah,
for
that's
the past
question.
2 years.
You know how I know Nick Saban was awesome at Alabama?
I think I know.
Auburn rolled the trees when he announced his retirement. They do that when they win the national title or beat Bama.
Yeah.
And they went out there and rolled the trees at Toomer's Corner.
How? That's kind of pathetic.
Well, yes.
That is pathetic.
But that's... You know what?
Oh,
in a way, I don't blame him.
It's like complaining about a 30-point win in basketball. It's pathetic.
I don't blame him in a way. Because there's tons of times that Bama tripped up Auburn on the way to their national titles.
Sure.
It happened a lot. Question is, would you follow him? If you're Dan Lanning, you're any of these names, any of these guys being bandied about for this job, would you follow Nick Saban?
I've we've always said you don't want to follow a legend because it's just you're not going to live up to that expectation. But I don't know if anyone's ever going to live up to that expectation of what Nick Saban had done at Alabama. I mean, that'd be incredible if the next coach did that. So why not? Why, if you're getting the call and they want to give you a shot and to come into Alabama, I mean, I think if you – I mean, you're in a great recruiting area, a hotbed recruiting area in the Southeast and Alabama and all that. The Florida Panhandle's hot. Good facilities and good boosters, good support. And if it doesn't work out, I mean, you got your name out there and they go, oh, you didn't work out where? Alabama? Yeah, I think we'll hire you. I think the successor, if it doesn't work out after 2, 3, 4 seasons, could still land on his feet at a major program. So it's almost like, okay, do you really tell Alabama no? That's maybe the real question, right? If they call you, do you really say, well, no, hey, call me after you fire your next guy? You don't do that. I think so. That's the real question. Do you tell Alabama no if they give you an opportunity to follow Nick Saban? So why not? Why not take a shot and see? So my answer would be yes. I'd do it. How about you?
I think you'd have to. If you're a certain – okay. I think it depends on who you are and where you're at. And that this kind of leads into, like, who would I hire? Who would they hire?
Yeah.
I think there's different guys that are up for this job that – have easier ways to say no than others. You know, Dan Lanning, for instance, he's the hot name. It seems like that's where this may be headed, at least in these early hours, mm-hmm. right?
His buyout, I think, is the most.
His buyout's $20 million.
Pretty big.
But, you know, I think he has reasons to say no. Oregon's kind of that job that. Biggest recruiting budget. You know, he's done all these things. You know, he's really in a good situation. I think Sark is in a lot of ways the same. Mm-hmm. Where he can, they're at places where they can continue to win at a level that maybe allows them to be the guy after the guy. Make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that Kalen DeBoer, what else can you do at Washington? Then go 14-1 and play for the title. You know what I'm saying? Like Washington, that program feels like it has a ceiling that maybe those other two don't.
Right.
If you're Lane, yeah, it looks like he's got Ole Miss cranked up at certain. But no offense, it's Ole Miss. What is the ceiling of Ole Miss versus Alabama? You know what I mean? I think it's going to be impossible for somebody to turn that job down because it is Alabama and we all know what it can be. Now, is that Alabama? Is it Saban? I think you can say both, because Alabama's had dominant stretches under multiple coaches. And to me, that's what makes them a blue blood, just like it makes OU a blue blood, just like it makes Notre Dame, just like it makes Ohio State, USC. They've been able to do a lot of things with multiple coaches, whereas some of these others haven't. So, you know, you have to follow. You have to do it if they offer. I think in a lot of ways, maybe Sark is the one that doesn't have to, because he's at Texas. But I think you have to, and you just got to do. You know, you also know what you're going to have to put up with when you do it. So who would you hire?
Well, I
if it was your choice, who would you hire?
It's not exciting. I mean, it is and it isn't. It would be Dan Lanning for me. I would go after him as my first choice. I go after him hard because of his history in the region. I think he's from Kansas City. He might be willing to get a little closer. Of course, we mentioned his coaching history. He was a GA at Alabama at one point. He obviously Georgia, Memphis, so all that. So he knows how to recruit this area, and I know why Oregon went and got him, because he's a really good coach, and I think because he has inroads to recruiting in that area, it'd be a lot easier to do that from your own backyard than across the country. I think that's the guy I would go after.
Question on the text line, would you call Kirby smart? Hell yes, it's a first call. Yes. It's the number one. It's the very first call you make. Now, I don't think Kirby Smart does it, but yes, he is the first call.
Yeah, gauges interest.
He's 1,000,000% the first call. I don't think people really take that as a serious contender for this job because of what he's got at Georgia. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
But yes, you call him very first, number one, that's who you call. Then when he tells you no, for me, the idea of Dan Lanning, I think, is amazing. Young, he can clearly recruit. Here's my problem with Dan Lanning. He's had every advantage possible in the Pac-12, and he hasn't won a Pac-12 title.
Yeah.
If it's me, I hire Sark. Sark is at a program on the level of what Alabama is. Sark won at Texas this year the way you're supposed to win at Texas, the way you're going to have to win at Alabama. He's been around that program. He was around Saban. He knows kind of the way the machinery works to make that place the machine that it is. And I think he's a damn good coach. And so if it's me, I hire Sark. The only thing, he's a really good coach. He's a really good offensive coach. And I think it's obvious what he did at Texas this year, that he's able to handle that scrutiny and that spotlight of what he's going to get at Alabama. I just don't. The one thing that scares me is that following the legend. Mm-hmm. And to me, there's one guy that has the stones to deal with that, and that's Lane.
Yeah.
I don't think Lane lets that bother him. Maybe Sark does. Maybe not. You know what I'm saying? But I hire Steve Sarkisian if it's my choice. Who do you think they're going to hire?
I don't think it'll be their first choice. I think their first choice is going to be Lanning. I think this is going to sound crazy. Yeah, I think it might be like their second or third choice. I think they'll give Sark a call. They're going to call all those guys. Sarkisian's interesting, but if this was not a situation where Texas is not going to the SEC, he'd be more inclined to go. But I think because of they are going to the SEC,
I think it's the opposite.
They might see it as an opportunity to go. Or he might see it as an opportunity to go, all right, there's a little upheaval now. It's our turn to jump up there.
Oh, you mean because they're going, because it makes him less likely to go to Bama.
Exactly.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
100%.
So I think that kind of takes him off the table. You know, Texas can match any amount of money that Alabama's going to want with or throw at him. And quite frankly, their facilities are maybe a tick better than Alabama's. I think Lane Kiffin.
And that's who they're going to hire?
I got a weird feeling.
They're going to hire?
I got a weird feeling about it. He's young, but he's kind of matured. He's playing the game right with the Twitter and stuff. They might go. They would love to fire him because he's the guy following Saban. So if it works out, hey, it works out. If it doesn't work out, all right, go fire that arrogant SOB. So. He could be the fall guy that they're looking for.
I would love if they hired that.
And if they hired him, they could also think, hey, if we get this guy, he's done really well in the portal. Those guys might follow him.
I hope that's who they're going to hire. I don't think it's going to be, though. It sure seems like all the smoke is headed Dan Lanning's way right now. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to end up hiring Kalen DeBoer.
You know, that name was on my list, too.
I think...
Because of the offense, it's innovative and high flying. And
he's been
that.
Great yeah. as a head coach. I think they're going to end up hiring Kalen DeBoer, even though all the smoke looks like Dan Lanning right
yeah.
now.
I don't think
the one thing about Lanning. I told you this off the air. I saw this quote from Saban, and he was talking about striking while the iron's hot to hire assistants and hire good coaches, and he mentioned Dan Lanning by name. Talking about how he was a GA under Saban at Alabama, went to Memphis, was on that coaching staff, and Saban kind of dilly-dallied around for a couple of days, and Kirby Smart hired him from right underneath his nose 2 days before Lanning was supposed to kind of have an interview with Saban, and Saban was hell-bent on hiring him, but he waited. And so seeing that quote and now hearing everything that's out there, at least in the early going of this, it sure seems like those two things kind of match if Saban has very much to do with naming his successor, which I would assume he probably does. Whether or not that's a great idea or not, we don't – I mean, you know, that remains to be seen. But I have a – I don't know. It sure seems like Lanning's the guy right now, but maybe not. Maybe he is comfortable enough with Oregon going to the Pac, to the Big Ten, where he maybe shies away from being that guy. But that doesn't seem like his attitude, though. I'm changing my mind. They're going to hire Dan Lanning. He'll take it.
Big coaching, this is none bigger. There's been none bigger in our lifetime with the open vacancy in college football. But history has shown us you'll hear one name for weeks, and then it's somebody else.
You know, it looks like they've given – it looks like it's going to happen fast. You know, there's reports out there that Alabama, Saban, when he told the team he asked for everybody to hang around for 72 hours, that tells me this thing is moving fast, mm-hmm. and it's going to be done. Maybe by the end of the day, we may be talking about Alabama's new coach tomorrow. Interesting, though, Saban did something that pretty sly. Now, he can say that he waited for the national title game to break this news. That's fine. But you know what he really waited for? The portal to close.
Oh, yeah.
To give whoever – and that's another reason that makes me think, okay, he's kind of handpicking his successor because he's given whoever that is – the biggest opportunity to keep this thing intact.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So yeah. That also leads me to believe that he has some say.
It's already had an effect on recruiting. They had a 5-star wide receiver.
He was kind of waffling anyway, yeah. Ryan Williams. He was waffling a little bit. And then, you know, that's one thing. Another thing, a lot of the 25 guys that'll be seniors next year in high school getting quotes, you know, the recruiting guys getting quotes from them, and they're all just like shocked. So I'm sure Bama's known that there was a possibility of this coming down the pike for a while just because of his age and whatnot.
We've speculated about it for the last couple of years.
Oh, absolutely. That's been our wild hair guess before this season, like 3 years
in
a row.
We're off a year. I think I said it last year.
I know. I think I said it 2 years ago. Yeah.
And then hearing, I mean, there's always those weird rumors that, well, if he wins a national title, he's going to retire. He wants to go out on top. But if he doesn't win, he's going to stick around. I heard that just this year, this past season. So, yeah. But, yeah, I think the hire will be quick. You won't. Here's the thing, though. I had this conversation with somebody last night. They are not going to hire some up-and-coming coordinator. They're going to go after the big names.
Oh, 100%. You have to follow. You can't follow Nick Saban with some hot shot from Eastern Washington,
nah. or the OC from Washington. You're not. His first head coaching job is not going to be at the University of Alabama.
Following Nick Saban,
no, you're not. That's not going to happen.
That could be where they go next if it doesn't work out with who they hire. But
yes.
Not this one.
Yeah,
not this one whatsoever. Yeah. Man, what a wild. I mean, I literally had my sports printed when you called me up at like 4:15 yesterday. Like, did you see this? No, what? And then refresh Twitter. There was like 120 tweets about this. And obviously that got rewritten.
I thought Twitter was going to break.
You know, there's not a lot of things that can break it. That could have been one of them. Everybody have a great Thursday.
You've been listening to the Skinny on Sports podcast with Aaron Cowan. Be sure to hit that subscribe button to get alerts of when the latest podcast is available. Thanks for listening.
That ball is blistered to right. Way!